Hello, and welcome to Minding Kingston's podcast, where we talk about all things mental health with people who live or work in the borough. I'm Vicky Bourne, and I work as the charity's counselling and wellbeing manager. In this edition,
we've seen some incredible stories of women that have come through from absolute trauma and rebuilt their lives and have a real sense of hope and purpose about them again.
With a background in teaching music, Sarah Clay founded Voices of Hope in 2019, a free community choir which encourages people, including those recovering from violence and abuse, to sing together to improve their mental and physical health. When the pandemic meant that choir stopped singing, they diversified to run a meal delivery service in partnership with other local organisations, including Kingston Council, and delivered 30,000 meals to those in need. I began by asking Sarah how the choirs began and how they had grown.
So I actually came out of a very difficult time in 2016 and 17. So I was struggling for those 2 years with PTSD and recovering from quite a lot of trauma in my life personally. And but as you said, like, I do have a background in music and a degree in music, and I've always taught music and love it. Love how it inspires people, it brings confidence, releases happy endorphins. And so back in 2018, actually, I started running. As I was recovering, I decided I wanted to start running a couple of choirs. So I ran two in elderly homes. So instead of just performing, I wanted to really find a way that people could, you know, older people could engage and sing together and get all the benefits of singing together and the self-esteem and that sense of when they performed, achievement. And so I ran a couple of those choirs and then started the Sisterhood Choir for women who've been through abuse, long-term physical mental health conditions, or just, you know, feeling on their own, isolated, or just love to sing. So we had that started in 2018, towards the end of 2018. And that was a great, you know, has been one of our most successful choirs and one of our strongest choirs. And so we also started a choir for people who've been on the streets called the Streetwise Choir at the time. And going into 2019, I was running, I think it was 9 different choirs. And somebody said to me, like, oh, have you thought about starting a charity? And I was like, no, never thought of that, but love the idea. Because the whole idea of the choirs was not a choir business. It was very much to bring the community together to really find a sense of belonging. You know, people who are on the outside, who love to sing, to do something they really enjoy together. And so in different settings, you know, whether it's an old people's home or for women or whatever.
So the idea was, we started, you know, that very much anybody could join then, really. There was no audition and no charge. It was just choirs being offered out to the community, to different parts of the community.
Yeah, absolutely. It was trying to make that joy of singing and building of community accessible to everybody. And amazingly, you know, for the Sister Choir and the Streetwise Choir, we had somebody who's one of our patrons now, who financed those for me personally. So he financed my time to run them. That's an amazing story in of itself, because just how that all developed. We actually met whilst having treatment in hospital, of all things. So that's an incredible story, you know, from...
It's these chance meetings, isn't it, that can lead to wonderful things happening, I think. Yeah,
it really is. And, you know, never underestimate those as well. But so, yeah, in 2019, I asked a group of people if they would be trustees. Amazingly, they all said yes. And Kingston Voluntary Action helped us hugely, actually, to then know what is the process of moving from being an unregistered charity to a registered charity. You know, what type of charity do you want to be? What should your aims and objectives be, so that you don't limit yourself, but also you're true to who you want to be? And so we actually got our charity status through in January 2020. And amazingly, we submitted it, I think it was the first week in January, and it came back in a week, which was just miraculous. It was just incredible. And I say that particularly because we then obviously went into the pandemic, and that enabled us to apply for grants, to be able to pivot, to, you know, we were able to upscale and to do a lot of different stuff, still within our objectives of as a charity, but we were able to do that because we had charity status. So, yeah.
Of course. And singing was not allowed during the pandemic, was it? And for quite a long time afterwards, which must have been difficult. But then, as you say, you diversified during that time.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. You know, all charities hit a massive... massively difficult time. Well, the whole world did, didn't it? But, you know, for charities, when your model is very much based on bringing, you know, potentially isolated and vulnerable people together to do an activity like singing, which is was the worst activity you could probably do. It was not the best model for a charity going into a pandemic, that is for sure. And we had to, I think by that point I had 11 projects, and we had to shut all of those on one day. So that was really hard. But at the same time, we worked with Kingston Voluntary Action, with Kingsgate Church, where our offices are based, and other community groups as well, and the council, to go, you know, what really is needed right now? What can we do to step into the need that everyone is facing? And we really felt...
When they were very much stuck at home and isolated.
Exactly. And because we'd worked a lot with people who struggle with physical mental health, we really felt, and so did other people, that effectively doing Meals on Wheels was hugely significant, so that people could have healthy, nutritious meals when previously they would have been having those at centres. You know, for example, when we ran a choir, we would run a lunch afterwards and do a healthy, substantial lunch. And, you know, people in dementia centres were actually having to be at home and not have that nutritious meals necessarily. Or so we just pivoted very quite quickly to do a meal hub and do Meals on Wheels, which was an incredibly incredibly exciting and challenging and inspiring, all rolled into one. So
yes, and I think I read about 30,000 meals were delivered during that time, is that right?
Yeah, so cooked, delivered amazingly. It was easy to mobilize, though, I have to say, because the world was furloughed,
full of volunteers.
So you know, we had a waiting list at times for volunteers, and we had chefs who were volunteered who came, and you know, we wouldn't have been able to, there's no way. I mean, I was the only person going into the pandemic, I was the only person that was paid by the charity, and that was on a self-employed basis. There was no employment that we had. We were very little, very young, and very low-income charity. So to then pivot round to do a big operation, we utilised volunteers, and they were incredible. The response from the community was outstanding. It really was. It was honestly one of the biggest sort of miracles to see. Do you know what I mean? When you see people respond with that kind of compassion and putting others before them and rolling up their sleeves to do anything from cleaning toilets to washing floors to cooking meals to packaging peas, you know, to vacuum packing rice for food banks. You know, we just, the response and the sense of selflessness was amazing. It really was.
Yeah, one of the really good things to come out of the pandemic. Many awful and sad things, of course, but that was such a positive thing, wasn't it? And something we also saw during the Olympics, of course. And the demand, and obviously indeed success of this, resulted then in something, in the creation of something called the Bright Box, I believe. And I wondered if you could tell us a bit about that.
Yeah, interestingly, last week we did our big 2022 celebration, which we do once a year. And so actually it's a very simple concept, and it's not really a new concept. You know, you have things like HelloFresh, where you have healthy, you know, have meal kits that go around that get delivered to families or to individuals, and they cook meals. So at the time, you know, I was working very closely with the council, and we were hearing a lot of stories about families that were struggling at home. Both, you know, their children normally had free school meals, and initially that wasn't happening. And also low-income families did not have, you know, gardens, they didn't have lots of devices, and kids were bored. And on the flip side, we also had too much food because we got huge amounts of surplus and people donating, incredible donations. Like at one point, we literally had a ton, an app, you know, 1,000 kilos of salmon delivered to us. You know, so we were...
Wow. Food. And was that from local supermarkets?
No, that was from a local fishmongers. They're incredible. So it was one of those situations where we're kind of like, oh, what about if we made some like fun recipe boxes for families? So, you know, we can work, and we worked with Achieving for Children to get those delivered to the families that needed them. So we worked with schools on that, and yeah, Achieving for Children in terms of transport. And we started with 17, so 17 boxes going out the first week. And BRITE, we spell BRITE, meaning building resilience in today's environment. So we didn't just want to give, you know, a food, we didn't want to do what Food Bank do so well, to be honest. Food Bank absolutely. Are phenomenal, and they in what they do,
they do it,
yeah, so there's no point us,
yeah, but you were doing something slightly different and a bit more active.
Yeah, there's no point us repeating, yeah, what somebody's already doing well, but what we want to do is give people all the ingredients and the fresh ingredients to create a healthy meal for the whole family, and particularly target that at children. So if you look at the Bright Box branding, it's very child friendly. Our recipe guides are all from a, you know, they're done in a dyslexia font. We print on light yellow paper because that's easier for children to read, etc. So we put quite a lot of thought into how do we deliver this excellently. And we started with 17 boxes, and, you know, we were celebrating last week. I think we are now across 4 boroughs. You know, we partner with organisations to deliver in Southwark. And so across Southwark, Richmond, Elmbridge and Kingston, obviously, and delivering just short of 500 boxes every week. And the families in that project for a whole year. And we really... It's like being on a really fun cookery course. You know, the children get involved. Kingston University's just evaluated the project for us, an independent evaluation, and the results have been amazing. You know, families talking about how it's bringing them together around food. They're all learning new skills. Their children are trying new vegetables that they never would have tried. And, you know, for us, that's
really exciting. And how do people get onto that scheme? Are they referred through schools, or how does that happen?
Yeah, so we partner with schools because we think they're best placed, really, to know who really needs the project. And we also work with some youth groups as well for a similar reason. So it's not us trying to identify families. We recognise that there's already partners in the borough that are very skilled in doing that, more so than we ever would be. So, yeah, we work with schools and youth groups.
Yeah, another great partnership. But during the pandemic, you caught COVID and were hospitalised for a while, I believe, which eventually, I think, led to the development of another project. But tell us a bit about that.
Yeah, so in the middle of a very exciting, sort of challenging, growing... In some ways,
busy,
yeah. And that's a good word for it. Yeah, we, at the end of 2020, amazingly, even though we'd had often up to 100 people in the building, we'd managed through all the, you know, all the distancing criteria and everything not to have any COVID outbreaks, which was incredible. But right at the end of the year, I caught COVID, and I have asthma. So for me, that was not a good combination.
Yeah, vulnerable.
Yeah, and I ended up getting COVID pneumonia and pleurisy, and having a phenomenally bad sort of... I don't have asthma badly, but I did with COVID. Like many people, you know, got to that point of, you know, I couldn't walk from my bedroom to the toilet without not being able to breathe. And maybe
it's
shouldn't...
frightening.
It was. And maybe shouldn't confess this on a interview, but, you know, I hadn't had a shower for a week because I couldn't, you know. And eventually, you know, sort of got to that point where I needed to call the ambulance. Well, NHS 111, and they called ambulances out. So, and I ended up in hospital for 3.5 weeks.
So quite a time.
It was.
And quite a frightening time, I imagine.
Yeah, I think, thankfully for me, maybe because of my overall lung capacity with being, you know, a singer and a musician, you know, wind player, play the flute, and being quite athletic, you know, I have a very good lung capacity generally. So I didn't have it nearly as rough as maybe some people. For me, it was the real problems with the interaction with asthma. So it just couldn't get the asthma to calm down.
Yeah.
So I was having, you know, multiple asthma attacks every day. So I need, you know, it was that for me was a difficulty, and really, you know, I really didn't suffer as much as a lot of people did who had to go to ICU and that kind of thing. But I was on a bay. I think what was traumatizing for me more than was that I was on a bay with everyone who had COVID, which is a very surreal experience, to be honest, when you're in a room full of people that have the same thing.
Really sick.
Yeah, and two people throughout those 3 weeks, two people who are on the bay died of COVID. And you know, just hearing that happen when you've also got COVID is a little bit of a headbender, you know?
Yes, of course, it's terrifying. Absolutely.
And I think the thing that really impacted me the most was when people, you know, I saw a fair few people being discharged, obviously, because I was there. And when they were discharged, they were often discharged with an oxygen cylinder and far from well, you know, and just their lives dramatically altered. And I think it was that sense of, oh, my goodness, like people have been in hospital and yet they're leaving still chronically ill. And I found that that was something that really motivated me to go, you know, what is it that we might be able to do? Can we do anything? Because obviously with a history of working with older people where they struggle with lung capacity and they, you know, struggle. If you're running a choir for people in a care home, if you don't work on breathing techniques and getting people to really utilise their lungs, you would have very little sound of a choir. By nature of running choirs with older people, and I've run a choir in the past for people who've had cancer and are recovering, which affects your voice box as well a lot, if you've had chemo. So we've done quite a lot of therapeutic work through choirs, or I have. And I also have a sister who's a consultant, and we were talking about it. And like, well, she's like, why don't you use some of your breathing exercises, singing exercises to help, you know, a friend, because there's a friend of mine who had COVID at the time. So, oh, that's a really good idea. Anyway, that's that combined with, you know, sort of seeing so many people leaving still with oxygen cylinders and unwell. So why don't we develop a course, or why don't I develop a course for people to improve their lung function? So it's not a cure, obviously, but it's trying to support people to regain as much lung function as they can through breathing, primarily breathing, but also sort of resistance work and singing techniques. And I developed that. It's a 6-week online course called the Active Breathing Course, but also did that with a lot of support from Annette Pouts, who's one of the GPs locally, Martha Early, who's Public Health Council, you know, and a significant vocal coach. So although developed the course, worked with them to develop, you know, like referral criteria and to make sure that we were reaching out to the right people. So we do that course for people from who are struggling with long COVID, but also people who have long-term respiratory conditions, to help them rebuild their intercostal muscles, improve their lung capacity, their diaphragmatic breathing, and all of the above. So, yeah.
Breathing is very much at the centre of everything we do, isn't it? And also so good and so important for your mental health and relaxation as well. So, you know, just is a very good technique to be aware of and develop, well, to do it properly anyway.
Yeah, and I think one of the interesting things I hadn't quite anticipated was that a lot of people who came on it said it helped with anxiety, which in retrospect, it's one of those things that you end up achieving but didn't necessarily set out to achieve. Yeah. But in retrospect,
a happy
but
side
of course.
Effect.
Yeah, but you're like, yes. But of course, because you're
teaching... We meant to do that.
Yeah, but of course, because you're teaching people how to do ordered breathing. And, you know, when you have had COVID or other respiratory conditions, actually breathing can become quite a panicky, traumatic thing.
Yeah, of course.
And so
you're constantly testing it out, I imagine, aren't you? And seeing how you're doing.
Yeah, and so I think just helping people to re-establish ordered breathing, deep breathing, controlled breathing, and giving them exercises they can do if they are feeling anxious or panicky as well, you know, that's been a really good impact for us. So
yeah, sounds brilliant. And, you know, again, one of your most significant partners, who you've mentioned already, has been Kingsgate Church, from where the Women's Hub is run. And you've got a really exciting new project going on with them at the moment, I think. And it's all culminating in November, I believe, isn't it?
Yeah, so coming out of the pandemic, partly because of the sisterhood choir we ran, and we run something called the Sisterhood Sanctuary, which is a sort of health and well-being session on Tuesdays for women. We pulled together a partnership of organisations called Kingston Women's Hub, which is really seeking to provide a wraparound support for women and empowering them to thrive. And that might be, you know, they're exiting out of domestic violence, and so refuge are very key in that, and the council. Mm-hmm. It might be doing one-to-one peer mentoring, but then we do a lot of these community-based sessions, like choirs, and the women's only spaces where women can engage in something that they naturally enjoy and really build a sense of community and engagement.
Develop friendships.
Which, if you can imagine, if you've been isolated due to ill health, or it's hugely important. It is.
Abusive relationship. Isolation is such a big...
It is.
...effect of that, isn't it?
Yeah, it can literally shut all your relationships down, and it can be hard to know how to rebuild that again. And so we have, we've seen some incredible stories of women that have come through from absolute trauma and rebuilt their lives and have a real sense of hope and purpose about them again. And so what we're running in November, it's November the 12th, we're hosting it at Kingsgate Church. And I'm doing this in partnership with Robin Harper Photography, because we have developed this project called The Pearl Project. And that project is taking stories from women around Kingston who've put their names forward and been incredibly brave, who are telling their story of recovery from abuse. That could be childhood abuse, attack, domestic violence. You know, it's not limited to one thing. And they're talking about their journey that they've been on, and kind of their hope for the future as well. So that night, it should be fantastic, because we're going to have a whole photography exhibition where we're really seeking to tell stories and give voice to women. We've got a book of their stories. We've got short film documentaries, which Kingston University have been involved in.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and there's been the libraries have been involved in a whole creative writing project.
So it's a real community project with the whole of the borough getting on board by the sound of it.
And the mayor has developed a new award called the Pearl Award, which we're going to be giving out to women who've been telling their stories, just to honour them. And we really hope...
Yes, of course.
But we really hope through that event to both honour women and to champion them and to give them a voice and be a source of hope and inspiration to other women. So that's one really big aim. And the other is to raise awareness of abuse and how prolific it is in our community.
Of course, the statistics are horrific, aren't they?
Shocking.
And yet, you know, nothing ever seems to change them, does it? It goes on year and year, and we just hear statistics getting worse instead of better. So that's such an important thing that you're doing.
It's true, but like my hope is that I think one of the reasons why statistics can get worse is because there's such a shame and stigma and a fear around abuse. So if you think about how often do you hear it talked about openly in a room full of people or in a meeting? It's one of those things that stays behind closed doors. So as a community, and with the Women's Hub, with Kingston Women's Hub, we really want to break this open.
Get it
we
out
want
there.
To break this open and go...
Ask the questions, have the conversations and
say there's nothing to be ashamed about. Though this does not need to be hidden. This does not need to be, you know... acceptable behind the curtains. You know, like, it's just we actually really want to see this come into the light, and hopefully for that to start to change within our community, the acceptance.
So finally, Sarah, we ask most people who have a link to the borough, you know, presumably you live around in the area, and we usually ask people, you know, something about some of their favourite things that they like to do locally, or anything they particularly value about living in the area. And I wondered if you'd like to share something.
Yeah, absolutely. I have to, like, my favourite thing is probably the River Thames. I love the river. I love water. So I do like walking along the River Thames. I also, when I'm feeling fit and healthy, love to cycle. And so I love cycling around this area, but also into the Surrey Hills as well. And I love that we are around green places and green spaces, you know, like Bushy Park. And, you know, that for me is probably one of my biggest things that I love about Kingston.
Yes, and that's how you relax, presumably, because from what seems to be a very busy and hectic but amazingly rewarding existence, and all the projects you've set up, just fantastic. I knew about some of them, but I didn't know about all, and I'm sure a lot of our listeners will feel the same. I was talking there to the director of Voices of Hope, Sarah Clay. Before we go, do have a listen to the other chats in this series. You can find them wherever you usually download your podcasts. And we'd be really grateful if you subscribed and left a review too. It all helps to spread the word. I'm Vicky Bourne of Mind in Kingston, and until the next time, take good care.